It's about your living space on that house taking over the entire block, so that you're not restrained within the house. It's not about the four walls of the house. It's actually about the four boundaries of the block.
Welcome to the Renovating Australia podcast, where we'll take you on site with industry leaders, experts, and everyday people who've mastered DIY or are just giving it a go.
If you're starting a renovation, building a new house, or just looking for some inspo, we've got you covered.
Before we get started, everything we talk about on this podcast is general in nature and does not take into account your own personal situation. If you're looking to get advice, please seek the help of a licensed financial advisor or professional consultant.
So let's renovate Australia.
Hello and welcome back to the Renovating Australia podcast. I am Alicia Chapman, and today Katie and I have a brilliant episode for you. If you've ever wondered what an architect does and how they can help you. Tim Stewart owns Tim Stewart Architects and is one of Brisbane's most renowned firms. They have worked on everything from huge commercial projects to high-end luxury homes and absolutely everything in between. Today, Tim shares tips with us on how to make the most of your environment, including using every inch of your block. Things that will make your home feel like a piece of art without compromising on functionality. And we break down what an architect actually does and when using one might be the right decision for you. If you haven't stalked Tim's website or Instagram, please make sure that you do that right now. Unless you're currently driving, then please wait until you're home. But Tim's work is some of our favorite in Brisbane, and we absolutely cannot wait to take you behind the scenes. Hey, Tim.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, good. So let's get into, who is the man behind Tim Stewart Architecture? How did you get into it? What's your background? Tell us all about you.
Yeah, look, so background is nothing special. It is kind of hard to explain how I got into architecture. It's something I think my parents built a couple of houses as I was growing up. I used to like looking at plans when I was in kindergarten, and it just kept developing a kind of I grew up on a small orchard, and so I was a little bit hands-on in that sort of way. So I think I really had this desire. As a kid, I think I actually really wanted to be a builder or a mechanic. Yeah. And I think in the end, I just ended up in an area where, architecture kind of, the thing I really like about architecture is the building, the way things go together. Yeah. And it's not out in the sun and hot. So
yes. Oh my God. Really good. Yeah. Smart decision. You get to see things come to life, but not actually be physically doing them.
Yes. Yeah.
So cool. So is it the first career move that you made is straight into architecture?
Straight out of school, 6 years straight of architecture. 2 years to do my registration and straight into running my own business. So it was kind of a really straight through process.
Yeah.
But, if you're going to do something, why waste time getting there?
Yeah. And I guess if you've got great ideas and you can go out on your own straight away, like that's such a cool story. And I think, you've built such a brand and a name for yourself, especially in the Brisbane area. I feel like in architecture or any sort of design, you really need to carve out a space for yourself. And I feel like you've done just that with the projects that you've been associated with. Did they start off, they're quite large scale and extremely luxurious now. Were they always like that or?
Oh, no, absolutely not. We started very low-key, not in the companies I worked at, because I worked full-time through my 6 years of my degree. And sort of by the time I started my own practice, I was working on some very large projects. I was project architect for the cruise terminal in Brisbane back at that stage.
Yeah, nice.
I did a number of large-scale things with Mervac back in the day. And then when I started my own business, I was doing carports and deck extensions.
Yep.
New kitchens. Yeah. So it was a real step, a total change of pace.
Yeah.
And we just started from nothing. And so it's very lovely that you say I've carved out a space, but it's been a long journey. It hasn't happened overnight.
Yeah. That's so cool. And so going back to, one of your first projects, was it a deck or was it?
I really can't remember. I think probably the one fortunate thing is really the first project I ever got to design myself was the Storrs house, which is still on our website. Which is actually my mum and dad's house.
Yep.
That's where I grew up as a kid on that property. And it's just a magnificent spot, magnificent site. And they gave me a fair bit of leeway. And I designed that house in my last couple of years working for someone else. And yeah, not long after we'd launched our company, I had that as a project. So that was great. But along the way in between doing that, I think we did a deck. I'm sure I did a couple of carports. And then we started doing some sort of smaller, reasonably, you know, cheaper housing, stuff that we couldn't imagine how we do it now. But it was really good. I had a little office. People used to just walk in off the street and get another job. And we just tried to do them well. And
I'm sure that word of mouth helped as well, like with your clients that you were.
Well, yeah, and it was kind of, there wasn't, you know, there were architects without websites and there was no Instagram and all that back in the day. You did have to rely on your reputation. And so it just built over the years, and here we are now, and we've got a bit more opportunity to be a bit more selective about the work that we do, because we can't do all the projects that come through the door. And that gives us a chance to do some big stuff and some crazy,
some amazing things,
insane stuff, and some small kind of interesting stuff as well. We like a little bit of variety, so.
Yeah, it's cool. And we can see the team buzzing around behind us. Yeah. So how big is your team now here?
Oh, the team at the moment, we're eight at the moment, but we've probably spent a lot of years at around 12 people, and I think that's our ideal. But we've gone through the COVID blues like everyone else.
Oh,
so,
gosh, yes.
But we've got eight fantastic people at the moment. I think Adam has been with me since day one. Employed and Rick almost as long, so it's good to have a core group of guys that you've had like more than a decade with. It's amazing.
And let's talk through, so you've mentioned, you know, where you've started from, and you've now do, as you touched on, some incredibly large projects and even some commercial stuff now. I can imagine that would be very different, you know, looking at a residential project and commercial, and obviously, you know, whilst you were studying, if you had exposure to both, do you have a preference between the two? Or
Look, our focus really is residential. I like to take on, like I said, I like a bit of variety. So people come to us with commercial jobs, and if it looks like an interesting one, we enjoy doing it. We did a bit of hospitality. We do some, you know, we've done shopping centres. We've done little retail things, sushi shops, all sorts of stuff.
And,
if we've got a good client and they're people we like to work with, we love to do some commercial work, and it can be quite fun. But at the end of the day, we're really about houses, multi-res, anything you can live in, you stay in. And with the benefit of being able to, we draw experience from the other things that we do, the commercial side of things.
Well, it's so much faster. Like, you look at how long it takes you to, well, depends on what it is, I'm sure. But, you know, you can do so much more and be a little bit more agile and create a space and be like, oh, that does work. Cool. We can replicate that or, you know, take inspiration from that. So, find out that combination.
It is amazing how long it actually takes for lots of projects, especially houses, to get from I've actually drawn it to when it gets a nice photo on Instagram. I look at some of it, sometimes I'm like, crikey, designed that 4 years ago. Which means you've got to be careful not to make it too of the moment. I've got a project, a house at the moment that's actually a 30-month build.
Wow.
It's so large.
Oh, my gosh.
And, so I think, 2.5 years on site. It's been going for 12 months and we're still pouring concrete. It's amazing.
Wow.
So you got to be patient on some of those projects. But when you do a smaller, often commercial space, it happens really quick, like you say. And there's other things you have to learn. We learn a lot about kitchens by doing restaurants and bars, and we learn a lot about lighting by doing, a gallery, and we learn those sorts of things. It's good to bring all that together, but our passion is houses, and it's been that way because the reward is so fantastic. You work with someone, you get to know those people, and you see what they get at the end and how excited often they are. So that's, that kind of makes life quite enjoyable.
Yeah, 100%.
I think I mean, one of my personal favourites of yours is obviously Upper Cairns with the Grey Boys, which was amazing. Is there like a signature Tim Stewart element to all the houses that you do design?
I would like to say that there isn't. Of course, there will be. because if we do something and we know it works well, or there's a combination of ways we do something, we don't try to reinvent the wheel every time, right? I don't want to do the next house worse than the last house. We want it to be the other. So we draw on the experience and the what we've learnt from each project. But to us, if it's a collaboration with the client, it's not going to be the same as the last one. And it's not going to just have our element and our signature and it's a Tim Stewart house. We would, you know, happily not have anyone know it was one of our builds if it was a collaboration and the client really loves it. So I'm sure that people will say, oh, yeah, I can spot your houses or whatnot. But I think there is a lot of variation in there too.
Yeah, well, you're building around, you know, a client's wants and needs, and they're always going to be different. And I think that's a really great segue into the key question, and the thing that I know is so daunting for so many of our listeners is understanding this whole space of, you know, choosing an architect or working with a designer and even like coming up with a concept in the first place. And a lot of people, I feel, are in that transition phase where they may have done a couple of projects themselves, maybe some DIY stuff, and now we're looking to the next thing. And it's that perhaps that next high-end, more luxurious project, and there's benefit to getting, you know, some experts on your team and on your side to help guide you through it. Can you talk to us a little bit about the process of working with someone as an architect and what that looks like?
Yeah, more than happy to. I think it's our most common question from clients, because many of our clients are first time doing a project like they're going to do, so they want to know about the process. And I can't agree more. It must be a daunting process to choose an architect. I can't imagine how – I can't put myself in at someone else's shoes really and imagine how I would do it. I think that'd be really tough. So, you know, I guess to try and assist in that, we do just talk about our process and how it goes. So what does an architect do? How is it different probably to what experience they've had if they've worked on a project without an architect? Obviously, we've done hundreds of houses. So we've got a huge amount of experience and we've learned a million things along the way. So we're going to know our way through it. Every building project and every house project, it's difficult. There's going to be some hard times through it. There's going to be some bumps in the road. Yeah. And so we're there to smooth those out as much as we can from that experience. So we obviously say to people who come who want to work with us, well, what are you going to get out of us? What's the benefit? So what we really say is that you're going to come to us with your ideas and it's going to be a collaboration. We're going to bring our things to the table and that really should add value. At the end of the day, what you're looking at when we're finished is much better than what you imagined it was going to be. So our process really is spending a lot of time getting that brief out of the client. I'm never going to show a concept plan after the first meeting, right?
Yeah.
I expect to meet with you a few times. I'm going to meet with you the first time to try and tell you why maybe you go with us or to look at your project. And then we're going to have a briefing meeting and maybe meet on site. And then we're going to have another really thorough briefing meeting. And then I'm going to start drawing. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to lay those plans out and we're going to discuss them. It's not, here you go, I've designed your house, it's all done. It's a back and forward until we've kind of got that right and we've been able to explain every part of the process. Why, you know, to me it's really important that nothing on the plan is there just because I think it's a good idea or we'll look, you know, oh, this will look really cool or, you know, imagine. Everything has a purpose and a reason. So it's a very pragmatic approach that then you have to create some sort of poetry in as well. So you should be able to have both of those. I'm never going to build something there just because I think it looks good from the street or it's a nice shape or something like that. So if I can explain that to my clients, they can understand it and they can see the value in it.
Yeah.
That's what we do. But I guess the other thing is that we project manage your project all the way through, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of things you're going to need to go through in the mm-hmm. process.
Tell me about it.
Which, yeah, anyone who's been through it knows it. And I think the more you've been through, the more of those,
exhausting things.
Yeah, you actually understand exist. In Brisbane, in inner city Brisbane, where we do most of our work, I mean, getting your designs through council.
Oh, yeah, that's a tough
number one pain. And there are so many restrictions and so many vagaries about what they may or may not accept. So that's the first thing, because if you go in blindly, you don't understand what their constraints are and then what maybe the loopholes are as well. You might get knocked back on your DA. You might have a very long and tedious DA process. So that's number one. We've kind of got to be all over that. We work in this character zoning, which is so horrible, so badly written.
Those windows just really have to be there just because we said so. They make no sense, but they have to stay.
but I mean, that's every – I think every geographical location you work in, typically you have some sort of, restraint or restriction that you've got to deal with. So – yeah, Brisbane's one we know really well, but we've also worked in Sydney and Noosa and those sorts of things. They have their own problems. Mm-hmm. But, that character zoning, we get through that. But then there's also, understanding the services and appointing a structural engineer. And I think with the way building codes are going, we often end up with a hydraulic engineer now too because we don't want to have a step down from our living room to our outdoor room and those sorts of things. So all those little pieces. And we coordinate that all in and we coordinate the town planners. And we leave, the process that you should be involved in is the fun bit that's designing.
Yeah.
And the other bit we take care of.
Yeah.
And we explain it all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. Just take the headache away. And I think so much of probably the design process will come so naturally to you now, Tim. Like, I feel, you've been doing this for a long time. You do incredible projects, but there is so much that will be different in an architecturally designed home. Like, if you look at something I draw on a napkin, cool, it might make sense because that wall might go there, great. But, like, what you guys bring in terms of working with the elements and making sure that the lighting is maximized and that there's good flow and all of those parts, all the stuff that you studied for years to know about, I feel like that's something really cool. Is there, specific elements that you feel are crucial to every build that you do, like maximizing light or something that you just would do naturally?
Yeah, definitely. How you kind of define that really specifically is difficult because there's an intrinsic value to how you lay out a plan that brings all of those elements together. I was always a bit miffed when people start talking about greenhouses, and kind of low emission, all that sort of thing. And we talk about having a low flow tap and solar panels and, these sorts of things. Well, that's easy. I mean, but if intrinsically the design is wrong, it's going to be a very poor energy house. It's going to be horrible to live in. It's going to use lots of power. So for us, it was always like, well, the things that we're doing and have always done, they're actually more important than the tick box things that people kind of associate with good environmental design, for one, because they lead into being a good house to live in. Mm-hmm. And if you've got the sun shining in on the west and heating the place up, it's not going to be great to live in. If you've got rooms that are dark or rooms that are too bright, it's horrible. Mm. So that idea of flow and the kind of how it responds to the site and the climatic conditions of that site are really, really important. It's probably the basis of what starts the design. Like, where do I start drawing? Because that's kind of the blank page effect, right? Where do you actually start?
Yeah. Yeah.
Those constraints are the starting point most of the time. And so they get addressed really strongly. And sometimes it's different because, you've got an amazing city view and it looks due west or due east. That would probably be difficult as well. But you've got to accept that and you've got to find the solutions to that as well. Mm. And those sort of things come into it. But I think one of the focuses of our design work and my design work is is that flow and the living and how that all flows together. And I don't think you really see that a lot in the photographs as much as you do when you're living in the house.
It's a feeling. And as we said when we walked in, it just feels really nice in here. And you can't describe it any other way. It's just a good feeling.
Yeah, the space does flow, exactly what you're saying though. That's where it's,
And I think so much of it are things that people perhaps take for granted or don't even notice. And it's good that they don't notice, because if you notice, that would be a poor design.
Yeah.
But the fact that you don't notice means it's a great design.
Yes. Yeah, the old, no one notices good design, but, bad design's really
terrible. They definitely,
Well, I was just reading something on that on Instagram or somewhere just a moment ago. It's like a fridge. Yeah, no one notices a good fridge, but a bad one really stinks.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
And that's true about design. I think it's true about the flow. I think if you come down into your kitchen in the morning and it's dark, compared to you come down for breakfast and there's a little bit of eastern sun just breaking through, but it's controlled or it's dappled or something. It's a totally different experience to living in a house. So we like to think people don't sell our houses very often. Sometimes we build for developers and sometimes we build for people doing that sort of thing. But for the people that are living in their house, we don't often do many more for them because they're still there. And I think that's really important because it's a huge amount of money and investment and time and effort that you put into it. You don't want to move in and think, it's not that great.
Yeah, definitely not.
No.
Speaking of though, do you have a favorite project? I mean, it's hard. It's like choosing a favorite child, right? Like you shouldn't really have one, but do you like?
I don't. Because every new project is the one I want to be my favorite, and you do something great there, and then you do the next one, you kind of go, oh, what can I just get excited about the next one. I do really enjoy going back to projects because you walk back into them and you go, oh, yeah, I really liked this place. And so, no, I wouldn't have a favourite project.
Would you have one that you're most proud of then, or one that, you faced a lot of challenges in?
Yeah, look, I think, I'm not a very sentimental person, so I don't. which I think is really important in what I do, because we see design for it is not the things.
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm very proud of the Stores House, which was the first house we ever did, right? It's the first opportunity that I was drawing and no one was checking or changing or doing everything. And that's a house that I still go back. I mean, my parents actually move out of that house in 2 days. They've been there for like 15 years.
Wow.
They've sold up the family property. They're moving on. But it was a great house because we kept going back there.
Yeah.
And I've grown up there and my family and, all the kids go up there. And it's still a nice house to go to. It was very difficult to design for mum.
Really?
To design for mum and dad, imagine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those family projects, they're really tough.
Yeah.
But we got there and it got built for the price it was supposed to get built for. And
That's a huge win.
Someone new is just about to move into it, so I hope they have a really wonderful experience in it themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. So, Tim, I'd love to touch on, as you know, a lot of our listeners do renovations. So when you are doing a renovation, is there a particular area that you think is the most important to focus on? Like there's always the saying kitchens and bathrooms sell houses. What's your take on that?
Well, I think they do. I would agree. But that's across the broad spectrum of things, I think they do. I think when you've got a really good design, the kitchen and the bathroom actually disappear back into the background and you notice other things about the place. But if you've got nothing else, then a kitchen and bathroom is great. We certainly don't focus on the kitchen and bathroom. They form part of the overall scheme of things.
Yep.
So, but if you're talking about, what should you focus on in doing a renovation? I'd say, most of our projects are renovation. Inner city Brisbane, it's mostly renovation, even though they're big scale renovation and we're redoing most of the house.
It's the same address.
Yeah. I think What we see, though, so often is the first thing that you have to knock down is the last person's renovation. So many people do it really badly and don't think about the consequences of that and spend all this money that's actually worth nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people talk about overcapitalization. That's like a word that everyone knows and throws around when it comes to budget. But no one ever talks about undercapitalizing, where you go and spend money and it's completely wasted.
Yeah.
And we see this in renovations all the time. Just you'd be better off not doing it. So so I think if you're doing a large scale thing, yes, it's about the site and what advantages you're going to get out of the block beyond the house that you're building.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it on a small scale, just really lightly, be really cautious and careful about it, and don't just chuck something on the side of the house that the next person's going to have to knock down.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know whether that kind of answers what you were thinking.
I think it's like tying back to what you said earlier, is everything having a purpose.
Mm.
You know, it's not just put there because it's a nice thing to have or it looks good on your napkin drawing.
Yeah.
It has a reason and it adds value to the house. But I think something that would be also interesting to know more about is the things you just touched on there. So when you are looking at a site, and we touched on them earlier, like talking about the orientation of the block, what other things do you consider when you're looking at a site before you even start drawing? What things will factor into what sort of drawing you do?
All the typical things that you can see. Where are the neighbours? Where's the sun come from? Where are the trees? What's the slope on the lot? Those sorts of things. But I guess when we sit down and do the design, it's about your living space on that house taking over the entire block so that you're not restrained within the house. It's not about the four walls of the house. It's actually about the four boundaries of the block.
Yeah.
So how does that house maximize every part of that site? And that's how the house is going to feel bigger, better, lighter, more interesting.
Yeah.
For us, it's looking at, okay, where can we get every last bit of the block? Where can we extend the view from the kitchen or the dining or from the front door out to the edges of the block or beyond if there's something great to see beyond?
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's how we approach a build is, you know, we start at the four boundaries or the however many boundaries, but we start at the boundaries and we work back and we think about the house from every dimension of the block, not just the footprint of the building.
Yeah, amazing. And I think that's so opposite to how I think about things.
Oh, totally.
Like, right?
You just look at what you're doing in the four walls.
We're so close-minded.
Really. Yeah,
Here is my kitchen.
But I think that's great advice for people on smaller blocks too, is like maximising your space, because often they would just think about, well, I've only got 400 square metres, so I've got to have this little bit of yard, but this is like the house. Yeah. So, yeah. I think that's great advice.
Such good advice. Like, I'm already thinking, in my plan, there's a very wasted corner in the side of my block. What could I do there? Because there's nothing right now. It's really interesting.
I think we got to a point where we had to start actually really thinking hard about where the air conditioners and hot water system and that go, because we had nothing. Every side we were kind of trying to utilize. And it's like, oh, we did. Yeah, there has to be a space that you don't utilize because you need to put some of those terrible things that you have to put there.
Mm.
It is definitely the thing that makes a house feel larger is if you can see through from the front to the back or from side, or you walk down a corridor and there's not a blank wall at the end of it, is going to make it a much, much more special house.
Yeah.
And so our designs focus on everything. We draw all of the hard landscape. I mean, the only thing we don't do is select the plants that go in the garden pretty much.
Yeah.
In terms of our thinking, it goes from the house to the outdoor space to the pool to the retaining walls to the terrace to the amphitheatre in the whatever it might be. It's about taking over the whole block.
Yeah, amazing. And I think something that I personally would love to know more about is when you are given a budget, this is something that we've heard great things about, we've heard horrible things about. I feel like working with budgets is probably the most challenging part of any renovation, and I'm sure challenging for you guys as well. How do you work through that process? I guess, you know, when a client comes to you and they want to build a palace and they have a budget of $1,000, how do you work back from that and work with them to get a result?
I totally agree. It's the hardest part of the project. And it's not because we can't design to a budget. It's not because we don't know how much something costs. It's because people set a budget and set a brief, but those two are never matching. And you can't blame people for starting out in that position because they don't know how much something costs and how much it's going to cost. And friends tell them they built their house for this much and it's probably not true.
And 5 years ago.
And it was years ago. I was just looking at, we got an email the other day and timber's going up 15% next month and this sort of thing. It just keeps growing. It just keeps getting more expensive. Even what I built that house 4 years ago for, you're going to pay a lot more now. Mm-hmm. But yes, the biggest problem is that exactly what you've said. I've got $1 million. I want a 6-bedroom house with guest bedroom with this. And it's not $1 million. It's a $2 million brief. Mm-hmm. So how do we deal with that? Firstly, if those two things are so far apart, then we don't do the project.
Yeah.
And so that's disappointing to some people, I suppose. But we have to show them what their brief is the first time around. I remember a couple of projects was we were sort of early days starting out and people came to us and they had a brief and they had a budget and we drew to the budget and then we kept getting sacked, right? Because we're really uninspired by your design. It wasn't as much, you know, what we'd hoped it would be, all this sort of thing, right? And you realise, well, when you do that, they don't know what they think that you're just putting out a poor design. When you show them exactly what they want, that's great. They always love it. And then you point out, hey, this is a 1,000-square-meter house and you've got $1 million. So it's not going to get built for $1,000 a square meter. Mm-hmm. Right? So now you have to come back or you have to come up with your budget.
Yep.
And for a lot of people, that's actually what they do. They increase their budget because they go, oh, I didn't realize that what we wanted was going to be this big or this expensive. But, yeah, it's a tedious process at the start. I really have found I have to start by showing the client what it is that they wanted and then pointing out how much that's going to cost.
Yeah.
So we often come back from there, but sometimes the budget just comes up and then sometimes it goes even bigger because they're like, oh, is that what we want? But no, but I really actually want that bigger.
And I
really
need to have this.
And that's all fine, but you've got to pay for it and nothing comes free and it just keeps getting more expensive and it just keeps shocking you how much stuff costs.
I think if someone told me that before I started designing this house, I would probably have been in a completely different mindset. Like, because I know for us, when we, we love where we are right now and it took a lot of work to get to where we got to with our final plans. But getting them back the first time, I was like, oh, great, this is amazing. And then I got them costed and my whole world crumbled and I nearly had a nervous breakdown and I was on the phone to Katie, like just almost in tears every day because I was like, how is this so far apart? I told them what my budget is. So someone had explained to me, well, I'm going to draw this. It's not going to be close to what your budget is, but I'm going to draw it. Then I would have been fine with that.
If
that advice alone is all I take away from today, which it's not, I've already learned about 12 other things, that just makes the world so much easier.
I think it's like managing people's expectations because half the time, I mean, as you're saying, like first time renovations and things like that, you have no idea. There's no guide or source or anything that sort of goes, you know, expect to pay this for what you're sort of looking. And as you said, I mean, you talk to your friend three suburbs across and there's costed half of what you're wanting to do. And it's just like you just have absolutely no idea. So, yeah, that's probably a big part of it is just managing people's expectations around pricing and
I think people think they're amazed I've designed something that they're going to love.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually really easy to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, but getting them something they love on budget that includes everything that they wanted, that where the balancing act comes in. Because if someone gives me a brief of all these things, then I turn that into a really beautiful house with all of those things, but it almost never is going to be what their budget is. Mm-hmm. So it's really easy to draw that amazing plan. So, drawing something that people are going to love, piece of cake, balancing the two things together is very hard. But I think, nearly everyone goes into it with overly optimistic ideas of how much they're going to spend.
Always, always. Like, you know, a whole house should cost $10, right? Like, easy.
It is interesting because I would say, you know, if I go back 5 to 10 years ago, people would ring up and they had a budget of $600,000 or so. Now we get heaps of people ringing up with $1 million and it's a lot of money. But it's almost never enough for what they're wanting to do. So it keeps growing, but it hasn't ever got to match.
Do you find it's different too with people that are renovating to sell rather than when it's their own home? Like I would assume that if it's for yourself, like you'd be happy to put in more money because it's kind of, you know, what you want and it's your forever home maybe. But
100%. So we now don't do much work where people are looking to sell straight off. Pretty much if you go to our website and you want something on there, you build it today, you're not going to sell it for much of a profit tomorrow. But people are happy to spend that money when they know they're going to be there for 5 years. Because over that period of time, the quality of the design for the age of the house, it actually brings it back and eventually it's not an overcapitalization, that word again. But typically you would say if you want the things that you want in your own home and you've gone through and you've really been careful about, I want this and I need this and it's going to be great if I have this special study that each kid has their own spot and there's a place for their bag and, you know, and you know, the third zip tap in the kitchenette and the master bedroom, that sort of thing. You're never going to sell it tomorrow for a profit on that unless you're the builder or you've got, you know. So if you're just the mum and dad coming to the front door saying, I've got this block of land, I want to build one of your houses on it, and then we're going to sell it and make a profit, then it's probably not going to be the project for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, they're going to be disappointed by what we're giving. What, you know, they're going to go, oh, but that's not one of the houses you normally design. But the two things, you have to spend the money if you want the outcome.
Yeah. Speaking of like simplifying and that whole design space, do you know of any trends that you're sort of seeing in this space at the moment? Like, I know you said beyond trend, but not trendy, which is very good advice, I think. Is there anything in particular that you've sort of seen or predict will start to become a bit of a trend?
Oh, look, I think there's been a bit of a change recently. We take briefs all the time from people, right? And they're generally the same. So we've got a really good idea of what most people are looking for and where the trend's going, right?
Yeah.
And that's changed over time. I mean, 15 years that we've been doing this, it's very different brief now than it was then, but the next person next week is going to be exactly the same, I just about guarantee it. So one thing that I do enjoy seeing, I mean, we've always, been about modernism and building modern houses. And even though working in Brisbane on a renovation of a Queenslander under a character code on a 400 square metre lot doesn't allow you to do a Farnsworth house,
too
right?
Too much, yeah.
But that mid-century modern, it's kind of nice that that's a bit of a trend at the moment, because behind that is actually, it's not mid-century modern, it's just modern, right? And that's been since the 1920s right through to now. It's the same principles and the same design ideas. So I think it's quite nice that that's coming through. I see things come in. I mean, everyone's doing curves now.
Yep.
And that will go out again. I think they're lovely, but don't do 100 of them in your house. Don't make your whole house a boomerang.
Every single,
But I think the biggest trends that we see changing are the ones where, like, 15 years ago, the ensuite was still just a small extra room, so you didn't have to use the main bathroom.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's like the biggest bathroom in the house with the fanciest finishes. And between the bedroom, the master bedroom, the ensuite, and the walk-in robe, it's like, it's enormous.
A retreat.
It wasn't like that, but now it's the most important part. And obviously, there was actually a time when everyone didn't want a butler's pantry.
But
everyone wants a butler's pantry. Yeah. So they're great. But in terms of the finishes, there's definitely a trend to a lighter palette at the moment, for sure. It's not as heavy timber. It's not as heavy brick. It's I think we're seeing all these stained oaks come in for flooring and that sort of thing. And it's quite good. They give you a broader palette. I think at the moment, if you're going to be on trend but not trendy, it's simple. It's light colours. I would just say pull things back. Good quality never goes out of fashion, right? You can go into a 40, 50-year-old house and you just go appreciate the really good quality and the clever things that have been done. I mean, I think I was in one recently. It's a really old house, but it's got these beautiful floor-to-ceiling sliding doors. They're still fantastic. That as opposed to a little aluminium patio slider in the middle of the wall, it's two different things, right?
Yeah,
so 100%. So do as small a renovation as you can and do it to the best quality that you can, and it might have some longevity.
Yep.
Do a big, cheap thing, it's going to get knocked down in 5 years.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's so important. If you are doing your own home, that's exactly what's going to stick with you, is that beautiful big door that makes sense and doesn't get torn out. And, when you're renovating again in 5, 10 years' time, you're not going to be changing that. So there are things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I think no one ever regrets how much they've spent once they're living in the house. Not even in 10 years, in 3 months. It often is forgotten about. I mean, there's a point, I guess, but no, you don't, because, and actually one of the things we see so often is we get to the point of, you know, final price is in and the client, oh, I want to still want to save some money on that. And so we take a few things out and we strip a few things back. And then without a doubt, by the end of the build, they're all back in there. Right? Because at some point they realize, well, why are we spending all this money and not actually doing that? Yeah, this is crazy. So, as I say, everyone's got a limit, but you really just do the best thing that you can possibly do. Don't cut corners because everyone will see it. Yep. Everyone will see the shortcut. Even if it's not evident day one, you know, in a year it's going to be really obvious.
Yeah, 100%. That's great advice. So what would your tips be then for if someone's, they're ready, they're going to start a big project and they're looking for an architect, what sort of thing, if they're not in Brisbane, can't come see you, what sort of thing should they be looking for or asking when they're speaking to these architects?
Well, what I think is really important is you need to, you're going to go speak to more than one architect. We expect people to do that. We want people to compare what we do. I think you've got to obviously love the work they do on their website first. Please don't go to an architect who does modern buildings and ask for a Hampton's house. Just don't even bother. Right? So, because they're not going to be really interested in your project, maybe in your money, but not your project, right? Yeah. You've got to have a good rapport with your architect. I mean, everyone that I work with, we work together for a few years or a couple of years, because we're there from the day you turn up to the day you move in and then often beyond. So if you don't like your architect, don't work with them, right? You've got to get on well with them and ask them the questions about, you know, how they work with you and how they take your ideas. I think there's two ways you might go about looking for an architect, though, because some people will see a certain architect's work and that architect does the same thing all the time and they think, I just want one of those. Well, if that's what you want, go to that architect, just get them to build it. Don't be too worried if it's not quite what you want, but you've got one of those, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's a bit of a, just ask the questions. How do you go about things? What if I want to change something? When can I change something? How many times are you going to redraw the sketch design? Those sorts of things. What is your process for managing the budget? What is your process for giving us drawings? What are we going to see? When are we going to see them?
Yeah.
But most importantly, pick someone with work you like and someone that you actually enjoy having a three-hour meeting with.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. Like, I know ourselves when we were looking, you know, very, very early stages at the cheapest option you could possibly get was where we started, because we needed to learn about this stuff. But with them, it all looks great on paper until you read all the fine print and you see, oh gosh, I've got two revisions for this project. Right, and that's it. And so I think that's something to be so aware of. And I don't think, you know, the more you go up and the more you invest in your plans, the more important it is that you're getting it right. So I think revisions and understanding that is really important too. Cool. Well, Tim, we will pop it in the show notes, but where can people find you to see the beautiful work that you've done and get in touch with you?
Well, on our website, timstewartarchitects.com.au, or give us a call. Our office is in Fortitude Valley, and we work all around Brisbane, all over the country, to be honest. But, yeah, you can phone up, talk to one of us, talk to me. I'll come and see you, have a look at your house, your renovation or your site, whichever it is. Well, I think we're pretty easy to find. Very on Instagram, good. Occasionally. We're very, very poor on Instagram.
But there's all right. So much beautiful work, Tim. It's good. I go through your tagged photos because then I can see some more.
Yeah.
Right. It's always a good one.
Fair enough. I think we've got a bit to put up there, but we took a bit of a break. And we're not so much about marketing. We're kind of more about
doing clients and the work. Yeah, that's right.
Amazing. Cool. Well, we'll pop that all in the show notes, but thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, Tim. It's been amazing. I know I've learnt so much. And Katie.
Oh, same.
It's been awesome.
Thank you. It's been an enjoyable hour or so.
Amazing.
Appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, Tim. Bye.
Thanks, Tim. Bye.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode. If you liked it, don't forget to hit subscribe and share the episode with your reno friends.
If you're looking for like-minded people, come and join us in our private Facebook group. Or follow us on the gram at renovating_Australia. See you next time.